enjoyed it very much. I'd like to open my sermon this morning with a few remarks. And I'm sure that, I doubt if anybody will offer an opinion this morning. Let me rephrase that. I did this once before in Minnesota, and I was surprised. Not surprised, I was pleased. But I offered a sermon, and I said if anybody had anything they'd like to say or questions they'd like to ask, to just raise their hand, and I'd acknowledge them, and we would proceed. This is always like a Sunday school or something else. And it went very well. I was real pleased, I guess would be the right word to use, pleasantly surprised, whatever the case may be. And it was a subject matter that was near and dear to the heart of at least a few of the folks that were there. And this morning I'd like to touch on a subject that is near and dear to the heart of many people. And I don't know let me start over. I'm not sure how near or what your opinions of the subject may be, but I'm sure that it's something that all of you have thought of at one time or another. But I don't want to get into the area of the general church jurisdiction. I don't want to do that. But I would like to express a few opinions, a few thoughts, a few scriptures along these lines, and to give us something to think about. And if we have an opinion, if anybody has an opinion that they would like to express to their missionary in charge or to anybody else, I'm sure that he would welcome it. I don't think that he would hesitate at all to hear what you have to say, or I don't think he would be reluctant at all to hear what you have to say. There is a feeling amongst some of the members of the church. Well, I was approached a little over a week ago, by a member who is having troubles with sacrament service because of the common cup. And he asked me my opinion. And so, don't ask me for an opinion if you don't want to sit down and talk for a little while. So about an hour and a half later, we were still discussing this. And I said, well, I guess for my own personal feelings, I hadn't come to an opinion or a conclusion. I said that when I was first introduced to the Church of Christ, where I went to church, they used individual glasses, and I thought nothing of it. I said I came to Independence and used a common cup, and I thought that was okay with me. I had no problem. I had thought nothing of it. And I said, where we go to church now, our practice there is to use the common cup. I said, and I have no problems with it. And he said, well, call me weak, call me Doubting Thomas, call me what you will. He said, I do have a problem with it. And so he proceeded to explain what his problem was. And in the process of talking with this brother, I did a lot of thinking. And so I'd like to share some of those thoughts and my reasons for those thoughts with you here this morning. And not try to convince you that one or the other is right, or that indeed that either one has to be the right way. There may be a solution to this dilemma, if we could call it that, that hasn't even entered my mind or my thinking. But I'd like to begin my thought. Having said that, so you know where I'm coming from, I'd like to begin with the 16th chapter of the book of Mark. I'd like to read that chapter, and at least through the first 18 verses, and there's only 20 verses, so I might as well say the chapter. I'd like to read that chapter and help you to get that. This is one of the things we were discussing in our Sunday school, how similar people that we know in times that we live in are like people who have lived and existed and experiences they have had in the scriptures. Brother Jared was mentioned, Joseph Smith was mentioned. We mentioned that how each of us, some of us more impressive than the others perhaps, that we're pleased to be living in the time in which we are living. And one brother expressed, I thought, very eloquently, thankful to be living in the land in which I am living. I mean, this is a great time to be living, but it's even greater to be living in this time as a resident and a citizen of this great land, of this great country. But starting with the first verse in the 16th chapter, this is after the Christ had been crucified, he'd been laid to rest. He was in the tomb. And Mary, and let's proceed with the thoughts as expressed here in the 16th chapter. And when the Sabbath was past, Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James and Salome, had brought sweet spices that they might come in and anoint him. And very early in the morning, the first day of the week, they came into the sepulchre at the rising of the sun. And they said among themselves, "Who shall roll us away the stone from the door of the sepulchre?" And when they looked, they saw that the stone was rolled away, for it was very great. Then entering into the sepulchre, they saw a young man sitting on the right side, clothed in a long white garment, and they were affrighted. And he saith unto them, "Be not affrighted. Ye seek Jesus of Nazareth, which was crucified. He is risen. He is not here. Behold, the place where they laid him. But go your way, tell his disciples and Peter that he goeth before you into Galilee. There shall ye see him, as he said unto you." And they went out quickly and fled from the sepulchre, for they trembled and were amazed. And neither said they anything to any man, for they were afraid. They'd been instructed not to fear, not to be fearful, but they were afraid. They couldn't reconcile themselves to what they had just seen and experienced. Now when Jesus was risen early the first day of the week, he appeared first to Mary Magdalene, out of whom he had cast seven devils. And she went and told them that had been with him, as they mourned and wept. And they, when they had heard that he was alive and had been seen of her, believed not. They didn't believe. After that, he appeared in another form unto two of them, as they walked and went into the country. And they went and told it unto the residue. Neither believed they them. Afterward, he appeared unto the leaven as they sat at meat, and upbraided them with their unbelief and hardness of heart, because they believed not them which had seen him after he was risen. And he said unto them, these are the words which he used in upbraiding them. And by the way, upbraiding is another word for reproving or rebuking or a kind of like a mild scolding. He wasn't condemning, or he wasn't abasing them in any way, but he was disgusted or unhappy with what they had, with the reaction that they had exhibited when told that he had risen. For a number of reasons, but and perhaps we'll get into them later. But speaking to the 11 now as they sat at meat, he said, "Go ye into all the world, and preach the gospel to every creature. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved, but he that believeth not shall be damned. And these signs shall follow them that believe. In my name shall they cast out devils, they shall speak with new tongues. They shall take up serpents, and if they drink any deadly thing, it shall not hurt them. And they shall lay hands on the sick, and they shall recover." So then after the Lord had spoken unto them, he was received up into heaven and sat on the right hand of God. And they went forth and preached everywhere, the Lord working with them and confirming the word which with signs following them. They were human. They weren't any different than you or I or anyone else. And the Lord had told them that he would accomplish these things at the time of his He had foretold his resurrection. Let me rephrase it that way. And yet, when it happened, they didn't remember. They didn't believe those that expressed to them what they had seen. Was it because it was Mary the Magdalene that had said this? Or was it because it was his mother that said this? Was it because of something about those individuals that they had reservations about? Or did they think that it was vain imaginations or pure fantasies on the part of the two brethren who saw them walking on the way? We don't know what caused them to think the things as they thought. We only know that even they, and we were talking about, it would have been nice to have lived in their time and to walk with Christ. But as Jack pointed out, that was only 4 years His ministry was something less than 5 years long that he lived and walked on the sea or the roads or the byways of the Sea of Galilee. And so it was a very short period of time. They weren't exposed to him over a real long period of time. And in that time, they had to form their opinions and form their faith in what he was telling them that at the time perhaps may have seemed like a fantasy to them, something that would be perhaps every man's dream and nobody's reality. But the point that I was trying to make, or the point that I would need to make, is that they had doubts in their minds too, just like people today have doubts in their minds. And Christ made them the promise. And this was brought up in a conversation which we had concerning the common cup, that if they drink any deadly thing, it should not hurt them, that they should lay hands on the sick and they shall recover. And it was pointed out that sometimes the sick recover and sometimes they don't. And is this a fault of the person laying on the hands, or is this the fault of the person whose hands are being laid upon? Is this a fault of the church in general, or is this a fault of a particular individual? And of course, everybody has an opinion. Sometimes we don't realize what that opinion is, but we have that opinion back in the back of our mind, and we try to bring up scriptures or things that substantiate or uphold that opinion. And during the course of the conversation, the comment was made about the people who demonstrate their faith in God by handling serpents or poisonous reptiles. And the comment was pointed out, and sometimes by me and sometimes by this other individual, that we aren't to tempt God. And we go back now to the let's go to the fourth chapter of Matthew, I think, in the fifth and seventh verses, and we'll find that Christ was having just come out of fasting and praying for 30 days. It was 40 days. It was 40 days, wasn't it? And when he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights, he was afterward hungered. And when the tempter came to him, he said, "If thou be the Son of God, command that these stones be made bread." But Christ answered his tempter, and he said, "It is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God." And then the devil taketh him up into the holy city, and setteth him up on a pinnacle of the temple. And he saith unto him, "If thou be the Son of God, cast thyself down. For it is written, he shall give his angels charge concerning thee, and in their hands they shall bear thee up, lest at any time thou dash thy foot against a stone." And Jesus said unto him, "It is written again, thou shalt not tempt the Lord thy God." You wouldn't do anything deliberately that might cause you physical harm or maiming or death, just because God would keep you or take care of you or protect you. You wouldn't tempt God. And so Christ didn't throw himself down from this pinnacle, expecting the angels to protect him, because he knew that he wasn't to tempt the Lord his God any more than the individual that wrote that. And this was written, by the way, where am I at here? It was written in Deuteronomy, the 6th chapter and 16th verse, where the instruction was given not to tempt the Lord thy God. So it goes back a long ways. It's not something that is of recent origin, you might say. Okay, all right. I thought I skipped one, but I didn't. The thought was expressed, though, that, well, what about the people who believe that they need to partake of the common cup in order to fulfill the tradition, and this was the word that was used, that has taken place throughout the I'm going to say history, and I should say existence of the restoration. that I don't want to express it so much as to identify who was talking. Perhaps some of you already know it, and it doesn't matter. He didn't ask not to be identified. It was only because he was very, very concerned that he hadn't attended several sacrament services because of the common cup and the, what he preserved to be, or what he felt was perhaps a real danger, health wise, that it wasn't. Good policy to expose yourself to something needlessly. He felt that if he was exposed to something unknowingly, that this would be fine. But if he was exposed to something knowing that there was sickness or contamination present, that this was taking a chance. And then during the whole conversation, of course, is always the fact that no matter what you're saying, it's your own brothers and sisters that you're talking about. There are people that do partake of the common cup when they have a cold, or when they have a fever blister, or other physical ailments on their body that perhaps they shouldn't do so. And this was what was concerned to him. And I'd like to turn to the 18th chapter of Matthew here. Read a few verses. And express a thought that I expressed to him there concerning this, because, we pointed out, or it was pointed out, that we aren't to say or do any of these things because it might offend someone. And so in all fairness, not in all fairness, but in keeping with that, I'd like to start with the first verse in this 18th chapter and read down through at least the first 9 verses. At the same time came the disciples unto Jesus, saying, "Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" And Jesus called a little child unto him and set him in the midst of them, and said, "Verily I say unto you, except ye be converted and become as little children, ye shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven. Whosoever therefore shall humble himself as this little child, the same is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And who shall receive one such little child in my name receiveth me. But whoso shall offend one of these little ones which believeth in me, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck, and that he was drowned in the depths of the sea. Woe unto the world because of offenses, for it must needs be that offenses come. But woe unto that man by whom the offense cometh. Wherefore, if thy hand or thy foot offend thee, cut them off and cast them from thee. It is better for thee to enter into life halt or maimed, rather than having two hands or two feet to be cast into the everlasting fire. And if thine eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee. It is better for thee to enter into life with one eye, rather than having two eyes to be cast into hell fire." And when this was mentioned as a reason for not objecting to the common cup, or not saying anything about using the common cup, this individual said, "Well, yes, I know that." He said, "That's the very reason why I stay away." He said, "I wouldn't want to offend anybody. I wouldn't want anyone to feel that I felt like I was better than they. I wouldn't want to do or say anything that would cause them to stay away and to refrain from coming just because I was there." So he said that it's easier for me to stay away than it is to perhaps offend someone else and make them stay away. Well, then I got to thinking about that, and this is, I think, the essence of what the Lord is speaking about here. Offenses must come, or situations must arise that cause offense. But woe unto that individual or that person by whom the offense cometh. Now, who is the more offended? Who is the more justified in their action? The one that comes and is offended because someone else is present, or the one that stays away because someone else comes? It's a dilemma. There's no easy answers. And it's not perhaps the proper thing for a sermon, but I wanted to stimulate your mind, to stimulate your thinking, to try to consider all the aspects of it, not just the person who is staying away, or not just the person who is, for whatever reason, has done whatever they've done that someone else has found to be offensive. And several ideas or several suggestions were offered as far as ways of getting around the problem, if you would call it that. But all of them hinged on the idea that we've got to be the type of people that God has intended for us to be. We've got to keep ourselves from all of the things in the world. We've got to keep ourselves separate from all the things in the world that do contaminate the world. Kind of getting ahead of my notes here, but let's go ahead, as long as I brought it up. Let's go to the 18th chapter of Revelation and read what John told us there. And we can still go back and pick up some of these other things. I may run out of time, and it's probably just well that we consider this now. And there's other things probably less important. But I'd like to, we could read the whole chapter, but the chapter is talking about the fall of Babylon the Great, which I believe is the great and abominable church or the Catholic organization. But to take out of that the part that I think pertains to the dilemma we're in right now, is this fourth and fifth verse in that 18th chapter. And John says, "And I heard another voice from heaven saying, Come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues. For her sins have reached into heaven, and God hath remembered her iniquities." Then he goes on to say, "Reward her even as she rewarded you, and double unto her double according to her works, and the cup which she hath filled to her double." And he's talking about the judgment or the rendering unto evil twice what it would do to other people, and especially here in the latter days. We were talking about that this morning. I said, getting a little bit into what I was thinking about in my sermon. We're living in the latter days. I think the most momentous days that are spoken of in the scriptures. Momentous not only in things that are going to happen because of science and because of understanding and knowledge that has been enlightened upon the world, but also because of the things that are going to happen because God has prophesied that they will happen to his people, and his people will be a part of these things. And this is a momentous time of history to be living and to be partaking of these things. And when we see how small an act can change the outcome of our lives. I might take a little time to explain. I expressed appreciation for living in this time and in this land, and that three generations back, brothers of my grandfather are still over there in Croatia, and in that part of that country, still fighting amongst themselves with the Muslims, and they don't have any hope, any reason to be concerned with the things which are of concern to you and I because of the position or condition that they are a part of. Of course, my grandfather isn't. His generation is gone. But folks that if I knew them would be my cousins, I guess you could say, they're still living under those conditions, and they don't have any of these fears or choices to make, because they're more interested in just surviving from day to day the things which they find a part of their life. And so I am thankful that my grandparents made the decision to come to this country at the time that they did. That makes me and my family, as far as we're concerned, Americans. We're not Afro-Americans, we're not German-Americans, we're not European-Americans, we're Americans. And we've always thought of ourselves that way. I mean, it was never any thought in my family. Of course, Dad had a lot of. I'm getting off the subject. Never mind that. We've always thought of ourselves as Americans, and since associated with the Church of Christ, we've all thought of ourselves as a family of Christ, and there is a bond. There is an affiliation that is so much closer to people who are, for other in other respects, perhaps total strangers, but simply because they are bonded or associated in this body of Christ, their love and concern and compassion for one another is greater than it is for even their own flesh and blood family many times. And this isn't just true now, but just true here. But it's true of every generation, it's true of every locality. I can think of Chad and Amber as an example in our locality here. When my wife and I were members of the church in Flint, Michigan, our little daughter, who's here with us today, was just a babe, an infant, not even able to speak or say where she hurt. When she developed spinal meningitis, the outpouring of prayers and love and support throughout the church was just unbelievable. And when one of the brethren came to me afterwards and expressed worse the fact that anyway that he knew that she was going to be okay, I said, "Well, why didn't you tell me? It never occurred to me that you didn't know," he said. "It just, the Lord told me that she was going to be healed and it was going to be okay." He said, "I assumed that you knew that too." And I said, "No, I didn't." And at the time, I was a little angry with him because he hadn't told me that. But afterwards, I realized that there was probably a reason for that. This was a humbling experience, but also was a real test or a real trial of the faith of a lot of people. So it doesn't begin or end with any generation, and these things don't have to happen for it to exist. But when problems exist, whatever they be, genetic or accidental or acts of God or acts of nature, His Spirit, His love, and His concern for one another will come through for all those who have an interest in Him and in His teachings. God has ordained it. God has not ordained it. He has provided it and given it there for us. And all we have to do is partake of it. And this is what John was talking about there in Revelation when he said, "Come out of her and be not partakers of her plagues." In other words, separate yourself from the things that are and the problems and the cares that are so big in this world, is so much a part of this of everyday life in this world, so that you will not have to be subjected to the results of what these things are. Let's turn over to the 12th chapter of Luke and read another back here somewhere. Read another scripture and kind of get this into connection with some of the other things that we have thought of here this morning or that I've tried to bring to mind here this morning. Trying to decide why I decided to use that sermon. Or why I decided to use that verse. I am in a very... Okay, I think I am. Well, let me read it. Maybe it'll come to mind. Set up an example of why I'm going to use it. I'm going to use it and then try to come back with why I turned to it. I don't know. Blessed are those, starting with the 37th verse of the 12th chapter of Luke. I'm going to read about three verses here. "Blessed are those servants whom the Lord, when he cometh, shall find watching. Verily I say unto you that he shall gird himself and make them to sit down to meat, and will come forth and serve them. And if he shall come in the second watch or in the third watch and find them so, blessed are those servants. And now this know, that if the good man of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not have suffered his house to be broken through. Be ye therefore ready also, for the Son of Man cometh at an hour when ye think not. And now I know why I chose that verse. If we knew when adversity or trouble existed, we would prepare ourselves at that particular time in whatever way or manner that it would be necessary to overcome whatever that adversity might be, whether it's a thief coming into our home, or somebody going to come by and drive by shooting, or whether we're going to have an accident, or whatever the situation might be. But we don't know. These things happen without warning. They happen without any advance preparation. And so it's necessary. It's necessary for you and me to be ready at all times for whatever the situation is that exists. And it's necessary for us today to consider what is the best route to take, the best solution to the dilemma before a problem exists, and not wait until after someone has a case of illness or disease before we do something about it. Had our brother and sister who have received the contaminated blood known beforehand that their blood was contaminated and would do unto them what had happened to them, they certainly wouldn't have taken it. They certainly would have tried run the test, whatever tests were necessary to make sure that problem didn't happen. But they didn't know. You know, they went forth in faith believing. And now it is up to us, it's up to you and me, to support them in every way that we can without being an offense to them, or without being an offense to their family. But at the same time, not causing them to be an offense to someone else. And how do we do this? This is a dilemma. And we don't know if we don't express ourselves so that we know what our thoughts are, what our feelings are, where we're coming from, we don't know how to address any individual today or in the future with whatever the problem may be that is before us. And so it becomes a test, did I say, a trial of our dependence upon God, and our willingness to protect ourselves in every way that we can, and in our duties or obligations to not wait until it's too late, but to make properly prepare ourselves and make proper preparations for whatever dilemma or whatever situation might might bring itself before us in this life and in this world. And I included that thought that I think we're living in the most exciting or rewarding times. For the very purpose that I don't want you to think that I feel bad because of any of these things that are existing in the world today. I didn't say that right, did I? Yeah, I feel bad that these things exist. I wish it didn't have to. But I feel that these things have to exist because of the nature of mankind. And I'm still glad to be a part of God's kingdom and his body in this day and age, even though that those things are present and will continue to be present, and perhaps will even get worse. We don't know how bad it may get, but Scripture tells us that it's going to be pretty bad. It's going to be pretty unsafe. unsavory, for lack of a better word. But that doesn't take away from it one little bit our responsibility or our opportunity to serve God and to serve mankind. And we can't turn our backs, or we can't desert our brethren just because they have the misfortune or the experience of receiving contaminated blood, any more than our brothers could desert me when our daughter had contracted meningitis. These are things which even had we known they were going to. Now we're ready? Okay. I think that if we knew all that was going to happen in our lives, we would become so frightened or fearful or apprehensive or whatever that other word is that means somebody's out to get you all the time, paranoid, that we wouldn't even get out of our house. We decided the only place for me to stay is home. But that wouldn't be any place for us. We wouldn't be able to witness for Christ. We wouldn't be able to help somebody who is needing help. And we wouldn't be able to prove to God our strength or our ability or our desire to serve Him. So we've got to be out and about. We've got to be facing these things, and we've got to be making decisions in our own mind based on Scripture, based on faith, based on belief, and based on God of what is good and best for everybody involved. And whatever the solution to the problem, I'm sure there is one. I don't think God has ever devised a predicament for any kind, any man, even including Jonah, that he couldn't get out of. And I'm sure that Jonah didn't like the idea of saying, don't worry about throwing the cargo overboard, folks. You got to throw me overboard. I'm the cause of this. I'm sure he didn't like to say that. But when it got to the point where he had to choose between his life and theirs, he had to make that choice, and he had to make that decision, and he had to face up to that fact that whatever happened, he was going to lose his life anyway. There was no point in him taking all those other lives with him. And he had, maybe I shouldn't say it that way, maybe he didn't think that, but I'm sure that in his own mind he felt like that if it was going to cost him his life, there was no point in sacrificing the other people's lives in the process. I don't think that he was thrown over the ship with any assurance in his mind that a big fish was going to come along and swallow him and spew him up on the shore. I don't think that Jonah knew that before it happened. I think that when he went over the side of that ship, he fully expected that this was the end, that this I've had a chance and I blew it and it's gone. And so it is today. We have a chance. We might blow it, but it isn't gone. And I don't think there's any predicament that God has given us that we can't find a solution for or an answer to. He has promised us that He would not try any of our faith above that which we are able to bear. Nobody knows what their breaking point is. Nobody knows how much they're able to bear. But whatever that is, God has given us strength, and He has given us reserves that we can draw on to accomplish whatever it is that He requires of us or asks of us. I would like to before I close, and I will close, but before I close, let's turn to page 650 in the Book of Mormon, 3rd Nephi, and read these thoughts, and then maybe sum up some of the things which I've tried to say here this morning. On page 650 in the 8th chapter of the 3rd book of Nephi, I'd like to start with the 28th verse and read down through at least the 43rd verse and then make a few comments. And it came to pass that Jesus commanded His disciples that they should bring forth some bread and wine unto Him. And while they were gone for bread and wine, He commanded the multitude that they should sit themselves down upon the earth. And when the disciples had come with bread and wine, and He took of the bread, and brake, and blessed it, and He gave unto the disciples, and commanded them that they should eat. And when they had eaten and were filled, which doesn't indicate to me that they had a feast, but they had more than just a token amount. When they had eaten and were filled, he commanded them that they should give unto the multitude. And when the multitude had eaten and were filled, he saith unto the disciples, Behold, there shall one be ordained among you. And to him will I give power that he shall break bread and bless it, and give it unto the people of my church, unto all they which shall believe and be baptized in my name. All they that believe and are baptized in my name. And this shall ye always observe to do, even as I have done, even as I have broken bread and blessed it and give it unto you. And this shall ye do in remembrance of my body, which I have shown unto you. And it shall be a testimony unto the Father that ye do always remember me. And if ye do always remember me, ye shall have my Spirit to be with you. And it came to pass that when he had said these words, he commanded his disciples that they should take of the wine of the cup and drink of it, and that they should give also unto the multitude that they might drink of it. And it came to pass that they did so, and they did drink of it and were filled. And they were and they gave unto the multitude. Let's see. Somehow I messed something up in there. But anyway, he gave to the disciples, and the disciples drank. And when they were filled, then they gave it to the multitude. Let me go back and read that again. And it came to pass that they did so, and did drink of it and were filled. And they gave unto the multitude, and they did drink, and they were filled. And when the disciples had done this, Jesus saith unto them, Blessed are ye for this thing which ye have done. For this is fulfilling my commandments, which, and this doth witness unto the Father that ye are willing to do that which I have commanded you. And this shall ye always do unto those who repent and are baptized in my name, and ye shall do it in remembrance of my blood, which I have shed for you, that ye may witness unto the Father that ye do always remember me. And if ye do always remember me, ye shall have my Spirit to be with you. And I give unto you a commandment that ye shall do these things. And if ye shall always do these things, blessed are ye, for ye are built upon my rock. But whoso among you shall do more or less than these are not built upon my rock, but are built upon a sandy foundation. And when the rain descends, and the floods come, and the winds blow and beat upon them, they shall fall, and the gates of hell are already open to receive them. Therefore blessed are ye if ye shall keep my commandments, which the Father hath commanded me that I should give unto you. Verily, verily, I say unto you, ye must watch and pray always, lest ye be tempted by the devil, and are led away captive by him. And as I have prayed among you, even so should ye pray in my church, among my people, which do repent and are baptized to be in my name. Behold, I am the light. I have set an example for you. And a more perfect example we probably couldn't find. I should have started with the 27th verse. Going looking back, because I said it, he spoke this to the multitude. And a multitude could be 20 or 30 people. It might even be 100 people. But the multitude here this day were about 2,500 souls. 2,500 people. There had to be more than one cup. And that is said to, what's the right word? For those who believe this, it's necessary that there only be one cup, that shows us that there was more than one cup, I think. By the same token, there wasn't 2,500 cups there, I don't believe. So I see that, no, I don't see a solution. I see that this brings us to the point, brings us to the what's the right word? It shows us at least that there is more than one way to fulfill this commandment. And if it's possible, perhaps, if it would be an option for someone to reach forth because of a physical lameness that they may have that they know of, or because of a lack of faith that they may have that they know of, or for whatever reason, if they could reach forth and partake of that individual cup, maybe it would be wise. I don't know. I'm not offering that as a solution. It's just there. I'm not saying it's the right way. It may not be the best way. But if it would create a situation that would cause my brother to come and join himself with us in our presence and feel at ease and at liberty and welcome and glad to be there, it's a option or what's the right word? It's something that I'm willing to do anyhow. I can't think of the word I'm looking for, but it's something that I'm willing to do in his behalf. And if he would never, if that cup was put there and he would never partake of it, that wouldn't bother me either. I have no reservations about reaching forth and partaking from the common cup. I really don't. I think that God has ordained this, and I think that he has put that there as a testimony for you and I, to him and to other people, that we are willing to keep his commandments and do his will and have his spirit to be with us. I think that is our covenant to him, even as he has covenanted in return that he will always be there, and he'll always be there for us, and he will always provide for us. But I don't want to force or impose that feeling or that belief or that confidence which I have on someone else who doesn't share that confidence or that belief or that feeling. And I can relate to, I guess is the word I'm looking for, where this brother is coming from. He realizes the importance of renewing that of covenant with God at least as often as he can, and preferably at least once a month. But he also recognizes a weakness on his own part, that he is not willing to treat in any other way. I don't know how else to say it. This is his solution to the problem, is to stay away. And this, I think, is less of a solution than if there was another option there for him, whatever that option might be. We talked of several things. If any among us would prefer not to come to sacrament service, I suppose those of the ministry could go and visit them individually. And there would surely be some in the ministry that could do this and probably would be willing to do this. And this may not be a solution either, because this may be showing preferential treatment to some people. I don't know. But make it a matter of prayer. Make it a matter of prayer in your hearts and in your homes. And ask God for guidance. And ask God to guide those who have the bearer responsibility of making these decisions, that we might say and do that which would be pleasing to our fellow man, and in so doing, not be an offense to our God. God bless you.
Thank you, Brother Bob. Now let's turn to number 292 for